there's no doubt that one of the major issues of 20th century history, surely in the United States, is corporate propaganda. That's a huge industry. In fact, it extends over the, obviously, the commercial media, but the whole range of systems that reach the public, the entertainment industry, television, a good bit of what appears in the schools, a lot of what appears straight out in the newspapers and so on. Huge amount of that comes straight out of the public relations industry, which was established in this country early in the century and sort of developed mainly in the 20s and on, and has become an enormous industry. It's now spreading over the rest of the world, but it's primarily here. And its goal from the beginning, perfectly openly and consciously, was to control the public mind, as they put it. And the reason was that the public mind was seen as the greatest threat to corporations. That's from early in the century. Business power was strong, but it's a very free country by comparative standards, and it's hard to call on state violence, not impossible, but hard to call upon state violence to crush people's efforts to achieve freedom and rights and justice. So therefore, it was recognized early on that it's going to be necessary to control people's minds. I should say that's not a new insight either. You know, you can read it in David Hume and the Enlightenment, where it was already recognized. In fact, you go back to the earliest stirrings of democratic revolutions in England in the 17th century, and there already was concern that we're not going to be able to control people by force, and we therefore have to control them by other means, controlling what they think, what they feel, their attitudes toward one another. I mean, all sorts of mechanisms of control are going to have to be devised. Which will replace the efficient use of force and violence that was available to a much greater extent earlier on, and as has been fortunately declining, you know, not uniformly, but often declining through the years, particularly here, leading to the need for other methods of control. You don't have to move very far from the Cambridge elite to learn about it. The leading figure of the public relations industry is a highly regarded Cambridge liberal, you know, Roosevelt Kennedy liberal, died recently, Edward Bernays, who wrote the standard manual of the public relations industry back in the 1920s, which is very much worth reading. Remember, I'm not talking about the right wing here. This is way at the left liberal end of American politics. His book, it's called On Propaganda, or maybe just Propaganda. I should mention that terminology changed during the Second World War. Prior to the Second World War, the term propaganda was used quite openly and freely for controlling the public mind. It got bad connotations during the Second World War because of, you know, Hitler and that sort of thing. So the term was dropped, and now there's other terms used. But if you read the literature in the social sciences and the public relations industry and so on back in the, say, 20s and the 30s, they describe what they're doing as propaganda. This manual is for the rising public relations industry, and he opens by pointing out that the conscious manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is the essential feature of a democratic society. It's the essence of democracy, as he later pointed out. And he said, we have the means to carry this out now. He said, we have the means to regiment people's minds as efficiently as armies regiment their bodies. And we must do this. First of all, it's the essential feature of democracy, but also, sort of footnote, it's the way to maintain power structures and authority structures and wealth and so on, roughly the way it is. It's worth remembering something else that they usually don't teach you very much about in school, and that is, if you go back to the origins of American society, it was founded on the principle that was stated very explicitly by the leading framer, James Madison, at the Constitutional Conventions, as he put it, the primary responsibility of government is to protect the minority of the opulent against the majority. And Madison recognized, smart guy, that this was going to be a serious problem if a democratic system were established. It was going to, if people had the right to vote, he used England as his model. England was the model for democracy in those days, right? It's like, I'm talking about 1780s. And he pointed out in the debates on the Constitutional Convention something which everybody ought to read in third grade in a free society. I mean, this is the origins of our society, you know. He pointed out that in England, if they had the right to vote, which fortunately they didn't, he said pretty soon you would find people calling for redistribution of property and for a tax on property rights for what nowadays we'd call agrarian reform. It was mostly an agricultural society. He didn't use the term agrarian reform, but same thing. He said people will start calling for agrarian reform. Obviously, that's intolerable, and we have to protect our own society against that kind of injustice by ensuring that the rights of property prevail. He recognized that, he said it's a problem now. He was already concerned in the 1780s by what he called symptoms of a leveling spirit. That is, people are trying to, you know, feel that property ought to be more equitably distributed. That's a danger. But he said that the danger is going to become much more severe over time as more and more people are marginalized and dispossessed and secretly yearn for a more equal distribution of life's blessings. Now, if those people get the vote, we're going to be in trouble, because it's going to be hard to protect the minority, the opulent, against the majority, which is what government's all about. And he therefore designed a constitutional system which was intended to prevent that danger. The system, the way he set it up, he and the other framers, because it was virtually unanimous, I mean, there's virtually no disagreement about this. The one person who might have disagreed, Jefferson, was not part of any of this stuff. The constitutional system as he designed it was supposed to put power in the hands of the wealthy, who are the more capable set of men, I'm quoting. Power must reside in the hands of the wealthy, the more capable set of men, with the general population fragmented, factionalized, dispersed, you know, in conflict, and so on and so forth. Well, this is like, we're now 1780s. Okay, it's been a pretty stable system. And as it's been harder, as the franchise has increased, so over time more and more people did get the right to vote. And that just raised the danger. Furthermore, the power of the state to coerce by violence, and that includes the power of private power, like the power of, say, Carnegie to hire Pinkertons and so on, as that has declined, the need to resort to these other measures of factionalization, instilling hatred, marginalizing people, straight propaganda, and so on, that's increased, and very consciously. So by the time you get to the 1920s, where I started from, it's recognized that huge resources must go into the conscious manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses, and we have to regiment them, their minds, as well as an army regiments their bodies, and we have the methods for it, and those methods are advertising, entertainment, straight propaganda in the media, schools, so on and so forth.